103.7 The Beat. How you doing, family? How you doing, family? In the building, Big Rob, we have a big dog. We got a big dog, man. Cedric Richmond. I don't want to get into your bio, but I talked about it earlier today. You have been on the record, been doing great things in the community. Started off as a congressperson in Louisiana, went on to work for President Biden, and now you're working for the DNC. And I'm just happy to welcome you to Muskegon. How you doing today?
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty good.
That's good. Well, I know you come to Michigan probably often, then, right?
Not too often, over the last, probably over the last 5 years, I've been out here a lot, and I was good friends with Brenda Lawrence.
Wow.
Amazing woman.
Southfield.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan is one of those, like swing states for this upcoming election, right?
Absolutely, and it's been that way for a while, but what's important about it and why we moved it up in the primary calendar is because of the people here. And it's diversity and it's hardworking, pro-labor, and just community feel. So it's always a great place to be, but there's a lot at stake this election, so you'll see people like me all around talking about it.
Talking to us. All right. I love it. Is it an uphill battle? How do you feel about the Democratic Party chances?
I don't think it's an uphill battle. If we do what we're supposed to do, we're going to win. And that is to answer to me, for people, the Janet Jackson test of what have you done for me lately.
Hey.
And we have to let people know, because they went out and voted in 2020, what they actually got. And so if you look at the African-American community, black community, we reduced black child poverty in half. And how did we do it? We sent out an extra $300 per child per month for an entire year. And why did we do it? Because we wanted to reduce child poverty, and especially in black and brown communities. And so there are a whole bunch of stats and other things that we did. But I think that this president, on day one, when he signed his executive order on breaking down systemic racism, was dead serious about it. And that's one of the reasons why I went into the White House, was because he said, people may not believe me, but I'm dead serious about this. We're going to deliver on this agenda. And as bad as Trump is and would be again, I think that for me, the motivating force is the Biden-Harris ticket deserves to be reelected. And the other guy is that awful.
You gave up your seat to go to the White House.
I did.
When I saw that, like, man, he must know something. That's because you were guaranteed to win an election in New Orleans.
I was.
Why did you do that?
Well, I turned it down the first couple of times. And then the president and I think we were flying to Georgia for the runoff for Warnock and Ossoff. And he said, Cedric, you do know how serious I am about racial equity and breaking down barriers and empowering every community. I said, I do. He said, if you believe it, I need you to come in the White House so everybody else will understand how serious I am about this. And in that moment, I said yes. And look, it was probably one of the best decisions I made. I think that if you look at Biden's record, I mean, in the first year, we put more black women on the appellate court than all other presidents combined.
Wow.
And so I think we will leave a legacy that will last lifetimes. So it was a great decision. But then it came time that I needed to go home and be with family, because I've been commuting to D.C. for, you know, right at 13 years.
Wow. I tell you what, I listened to Justice Jackson today in the Supreme Court, and she handling her business up there. She coming at him.
All I can say is she's the real deal.
Yeah.
And when it was time to make a decision on who we would nominate, because the president always said that he was going to nominate a black female because it was a void. It was a missing voice on that court.
Right.
We didn't find a black female. We found the smartest judge in the country.
Wow.
And she is just that good. And so we're proud to have her there. She's not our black female justice. We think of her as one of the smartest justices on the court, if not the smartest. And I think when you watch her, yeah, you see how good she is.
Right. We do our station ID, WVSLP 1037 Muskegon, Muskegon Heights. We got Cedric Richmond in the building, former congressman, former senior advisor to President Biden. What was it like working with Biden? We're going to get into some black issues, too, but we got right. And I know you prepare for all that. We don't have to give him the script. Right? He built for this.
He didn't send us a list of questions.
But you met with Ice Cube back in the day, right? Or you the one of the people that talked to Ice Cube?
I did.
He ready for all this.
You old enough to know who Ice Cube is?
Come on, Rob.
it was good to speak to him, and I was truly impressed on how dedicated he was to black economic issues. And unfortunately, there was some miscommunication on, understanding that he thought I said we'd get back to you after we win. And what I remember telling him was that most of the issues you brought up, we've already incorporated into our Lift Every Voice agenda because it was about black wealth. It was about black entrepreneurship. And right. So if you're grading us now, black entrepreneurship is at an all-time high.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The racial wealth gap is at an all-time low. Right. So our focus, and a lot of times when people come to our communities, they talk about criminal justice reform only. Right. And for me, I talk about education, and I talk about entrepreneurship, because if we can get education and entrepreneurship right, the other problems will fix themselves. And so those are just things we have to do. But yeah, Boys in the Hood was one of my movies. and then at the end, Cuba Gooding went to Morehouse. So,
you're from New Orleans, where, Cash Money down there?
I'm from New Orleans. Cash Money and No Limits. So we got... We got Lil Wayne, we got Baby, we got Slim, we got P.
You don't look Mystical. Old enough to know who those people are.
I know them all. And now we're proud of, Juvenile, and I get to see him a lot, so it's cool.
Oh, that's good. You know, this housing crisis is a serious issue, and I don't know what could be done on a federal level. But what kind of advice are you giving to the president or to Congress on dealing with the housing crisis so high that people are priced out now?
It's a challenge, and we just lost our Secretary of Housing, Marsha Fudge, who was a congresswoman and actually a international president of Delta Sigma Theta Incorporated. She's the real deal, and she put a bunch of programs in place, and which the key to housing is going to be the administration, which they're doing, committing real resources and sending out to cities and communities so that they can build and incentivize people to build affordable housing. The demand is so great right now, from Airbnb to home ownership to people renting, that the working class is really getting priced out. And the only way to incentivize people to build those affordable units is you're going to have to put some skin in the game, and that's money. And so the administration is doing that, and they're doing it all over the country, and you start to, I think, see some of that, those price pressures start to ease.
Hmm. Well, you know, so what was that relationship like with you and President Biden? Did he listen to you on all the issues, or was there some stuff that we still left on the table?
No, the relationship there between the vice president and I and the president, we were the only three in the West Wing that had ever been elected before. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when all of the advisors would get together and people would talk in economic language, some people were talking legalese, some people, he would always turn to either the vice president or myself and just say, you know what are real people saying? What are you hearing back at home? Because he knew I went home every weekend, like outside of Washington, tell me what you're hearing. Right. Tell me what you think. And then his other thing was, we have to communicate to people or with people in a language that they understand. Like,
right.
Don't go out talking about, oh, we're going to bring broadband to every community. Well, talk about the internet. We're going to bring internet and connectivity to every community.
Right.
Don't say infrastructure. Talk about roads and bridges and lead pipes and all of those things. Talk about it where people understand that we actually get what they're dealing with every day, and that right. we're working on fixing it. But yeah, he would He would ask my advice. Would he always take it? Probably not. I probably wouldn't take all my advice.
Wow. Well, marijuana, federal level, that seems to be an issue in our community. Folks who've been convicted of it have a hard time. What's the possibility of doing the next term that's wiping it off the book, giving these people, what they get? When
you
get convicted of marijuana crime on a federal level?
Expungement. Yeah.
Well, the president did, automatic pardons for everybody who has a marijuana offense. And so if you only had a marijuana offense, he did that already.
Okay.
And the next steps are to, one, deschedule it so that, one, you can use it for more medical research, but two, you take it off the level with heroin and all of those drugs. And then it gives the states more ability to regulate it how they see fit. But his marijuana policy has been very straightforward. And it was one of the promises he made on the campaign trail. He said nobody should go to jail for marijuana. And he's living up to that.
So do you see it being descheduled? Because, you know, I don't think you can carry it on airplanes or anything yet.
No, I don't see that day coming soon.
Really? You go to every state, everybody's smoking it. Like, it's... Well, we're here. You in the marijuana zone right now. We're in the marijuana
zone. Yeah, it's like five of them around us.
Crime hasn't went up.
Well, what I would say is it's still regulated by states, too.
Right.
So, you know, you don't want to go to different jurisdictions with different laws. You're flying. But I don't see it getting there. I think the administration and... I would say double check it. I think they've already made announcements on the scheduling, or at least DEA and others are looking at going through the process to deschedule.
Wow. Do you think this next election is it about abortion rights? Is it about some other? Is it about immigration? Is it about other issues?
I would hope it's still about economic mobility and empowering people to reach their highest potential or reach their wildest dreams. And will abortion play a part of it? Yes. The Supreme Court upended 50 years of settled law that we would not intervene in the most difficult decision for a woman, and that she should control her own body. And are we going to fight to protect that and make it an issue? Absolutely. But we're still going to talk about other issues also. And I think that when you look at this election and you look at some of the things we accomplished, the former president wants to undo stuff just like he did with Obamacare. Mm-hmm. I want to get rid of Obamacare. Well, probably didn't even know what Obamacare was. It was just Obamacare. He wanted to get rid of it.
Sounded good.
And what he's missing is the millions of people that now have health care because of it. The fact that healthcare costs have gone down tremendously because of it. So we've expanded it. You now have more African Americans with health insurance than ever before in history.
Right.
Costs are coming down. And Trump's answer to that is, I'm still going to repeal Obamacare. And so, look, I think that the former president is the best I've ever seen at three-card money. All he does is keep throwing stuff out there to try to distract you from looking at what's important. And if you look at what's important in our communities, it's job creation. We've created 15 million jobs. Wow. He lost jobs. And wages are going up. The problem with that are costs are going up too. And we still have more work to do on that. And we're going to continue to work on that either by reducing the cost of insulin to $35 a month, which was a big deal for the black communities. If you think about how many of our seniors are insulin dependent, but we're going to continue working. And we don't profess to say we did it. We got it all done in the first term, but we got a lot done, and we're going to continue to work to. And the other thing we're proud of is all the money that we've spent in effort to increase black business, because it didn't happen by accident. We raised the federal procurement goals from 10% to 15%. That equals somewhere like $500 billion over the next 5 years. That's a big deal. And then We made the Minority Business Development Agency permanent. We seeded it with $110 million so that we can help people start to develop businesses. And look, all of that sounds good, but here's what it is. Black people have just as good, if not better, ideas than everybody else. But we oftentimes can't go to the dinner table and have a fundraising call and say, I have this idea. Can I get 10,000 from you, 15,000 from you? Oftentimes, right, we mortgage our house, we take our life savings, and we follow our dream. So by putting money in the Small Business Development Agency, now people with ideas don't necessarily have to risk everything that they have in order to succeed. And so now that's why you see so many African-American businesses being started. And then our goal is to make sure that they're sustainable and that they stay for the long term, because what black business does is they hire vulnerable kids out of the community. They keep them out of the out of trouble. Those kids don't turn to the street economy. Right. All of it's related. And so I'm happy that we have a president and a vice president that actually get it and understand that the best way to fight crime is not necessarily to just dump money into prisons and police, but to catch it beforehand with creating black business, increasing education opportunities. And then the one I always focus on is black women make half of what white men make. Mm-hmm. And so if a black single mother has to work two jobs to make what a white man makes, then of course she's not home to help with homework, because she's busting her tail to keep a roof over her head, clothes on her back, and food on the table. And if we don't recognize that and help, then it's government that's failing. It's not her. And so that's why student loan debt forgiveness was important and all the other things.
Wow. Yeah. Is the party, Democratic Party, watching the protests around the country on the college campuses? And you talk to college kids, they're not happy with how the administration have handled what some would say genocide in Gaza. You know, I travel around the world. I'm a chief in Ghana, and I got a business attendant there. When they see what's going on in Israel, they see America hands supporting genocide. How do we correct that? What can President Biden administration do to get that right?
Look, it's not an easy issue. I will tell you that the president is very critical of Netanyahu, his actions, his motives, and his what they're doing. At the same time, he's called for temporary ceasefires. But the goal here is ensuring that we have enduring peace in over there, and that we actually have a two-state solution, and that it's not easy. So what I think some people with the outrage over the visuals, and look, for the first time, you have a war that is not being shown through the lens of the media.
Exactly.
It's being shown through the lens of people on the ground, through social media, through TikTok, right, and through others.
Right.
And so it is devastating. The president spoke time and time again about innocent civilian lives, innocent Palestinians being killed. And so that's why we are doubling down on humanitarian aid, making sure that we can get stuff there. We're building a port so that we can make sure we get goods in. And we're calling on Israel to end and be more strategic about it. Nobody's defending Hamas, but at the same time, we should not be over there. Israel should not be over there just indiscriminately killing Palestinians. But the president is very clear. He's for a two-state solution, and that's what he's trying to work to. And I don't think that that's easy. If it was easy, it would have been done already. But he's committed to it. And at the same time, this is one of those areas I do draw a contrast with Trump. Trump said, let's incinerate Gaza.
Wow.
Jared, his son-in-law, said it would make great beachfront property. And so the other side is so off the rails. Yeah. And the president, and look, we understand that everybody's not happy with all of the actions.
Exactly.
But the president's motive is very clear. He wants enduring peace. He wants a two-state solution. And he wants to stop the killing of innocent Palestinians and civilians over in Gaza.
Wow. Cedric Richmond's in the building. One last question, if we can get it up to Rob. You're from Louisiana. You've seen the impact of slavery. and reparations is starting to be up. What is your opinion on reparations, and do you ever think there will be some form of reparations for Foundation of Black Americans?
Well, I won't tell you my opinion on it. I'll tell you my prediction. I can tell you my opinion. You can see my opinion.
He said, look at me. I know you're from Louisiana, from New Orleans.
I will tell you that the lasting legacies of slavery are real. They're still here. The anger is still there, and it's real. It was real trauma, and I believe that the trauma is not as significant as the economic and the systemic damage that was done, and that will be long during. Now, do I think that there's a Congress out there that would do it with 60-vote filibuster in the Senate? I'm not sure. I would color it doubtful, but I think that that doesn't mean the fight for it has to stop, and I think we have to get creative in ways that we think we could be impactful, and that whether it's through college tuition for those who want to go, or if it's trade school for those who want to go, whether it's seed money to start a business. And so the idea of reparations is to repair the damage that was done. I think if you look at this administration, we have tried to do a lot of that without titles on it. I think the first 2 months we were there, we put $5 billion in a pot for black farmers who had been historically discriminated against by USDA. Then one of Trump's guys took it to the Supreme Court, and they ruled it unconstitutional. So that shows two things. One, that there are ways to repair the damage by just doing it. Part of it is if you have an executive who wants to do it, you do it. Mm-hmm. But the other thing it shows is how important the Supreme Court is. And Donald Trump put three people on the last Supreme Court, and they have been gutting our rights every chance they get. They took out considerations of race and college admissions. Yeah. So we're talking about reparations. They're talking about going back. I mean, they're literally going backwards. And so the reason why you consider diversity in college education is because we've been discriminated against for so long. Our education systems were always inferior. But this court is saying you can't look at it. If you look at the assault on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So it's important to win this election, because the next president will probably appoint a couple of justices also. And I would, you know, we saw what Trump would appoint. We saw what Biden would appoint. And I'm going to side with Ketanji Brown Jackson all day tomorrow.
All right. Rob, one last question. Nothing deal with politics, Rob.
No.
This last question. I'm just
impressed with how he's not afraid to say black. He's not afraid to say African American.
Yeah. New Orleans.
He's not afraid.
Right.
You know, we've interviewed thousands of people.
Bunch of folks.
And they act like they're afraid to say, you know, the common thing we all have is, you know, if black people go to protest something, we all should be out there protesting, because it starts with us with a lot of different things. Yeah. What advice would you give a young black girl or a young black boy that's out there listening to you right now, and they say, you know what, I wouldn't mind being a congressman one day. I wouldn't mind doing what he does one day. What advice would you give them?
I would tell them to put in the work, just like it is with basketball, football, baseball, tennis, or any sport, or musical talent. You have to put in the work. But for people who want to be in politics, this is the advice I give them all, and this is the way I judge people when they come ask me for support. I ask them, what have you done for others in your lifetime? Did you coach Little League? Did you do Bible study? Did you walk a senior across the street? What did you do for others where you weren't getting paid for it? Because the heart of a public servant is about being a servant.
Yes, sir.
And if you have not demonstrated that in your life, don't come to me when you want the spotlight of being an elected official, because that's not what it's about. So, you know, that would be my advice. And you see it all the time. I mean, you see celebrities that turn from, and athletes that turn from their craft to their politics. And it's a hard adjustment, because when you're a celebrity or successful, people humble themselves to you. But when you become an elected official, you need to humble yourself to everybody you bump into, because they're doing the best they can living life. And it's your job to address any issues that they have. So it's a hard transition. But if I want more young people to get involved, and this crap about you're the next generation is just that. It's crap. You're not the next generation of leaders. You're a leader now. Martin Luther King wrote his first op-ed at 16 while he was at Morehouse, calling for equal rights for blacks and white people. And so don't let people tell you you have to wait. You know, just bust through the door with the best version of you. And if you remember that the job is to deliver for other people, I think you'll be successful at it. But you have to have the heart for it, because it's not easy and you're not going to make a lot of money.
Wow. There you go, family. We on time, too, boss lady. We on time. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me. Keep doing what you're doing, too.
Thank you, sir. And I know you're speaking tonight, right? They got a ball going on, something, right?
Yeah, we have a dinner tonight. Okay. So I'll be there. And look, I'm available. I can do your interviews by phone. Look, I'm easy. I like what you're doing here, so count me in.
We're going to keep in contact. We got a station in Benton Harbor and in Orlando, so we're going to make sure we keep in contact. And thank you for – are you going to the draft in Detroit?
No.
Oh, okay. You're getting back to New Orleans for that weekend.
As bad as – look, I think the Saints need a lot of stuff. I wish I could go to the draft. I wish I could do the draft.
All right. Are you LSU, Southern? What team you ride with?
I'm Southern. I'm Morehouse first.
Morehouse. Okay.
Then Southern. My mom and dad graduated from Southern. My mother's actually on Southern's board, but they come after Morehouse, where my brother and I went.
Okay.
But I'm a Pelicans fan right now. So we got knocked down last night, but we come home this weekend. So I'm excited about what we can do. Oh. I'll tell you one thing. Zion's the real deal.
He is. He's the real deal. Honored to meet you, Muskegon. It's a rare situation. We get people like Cedric Richmond in the city. And you're about as humble and down as earth as they get.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I know you got to go. And we'll keep in contact, sir.
You got it.
All right. Back to more music after the jams.